an engagement party and fashion fest recap, fanfic is booming in Hollywood, and are influencers taking over red carpets?
I'm Maggie Zhao.
And I'm Jasmine Wallace.
And you're listening to Culture Club, where we chat about pop culture, current affairs, the internet, and our lives.
Today's episode of Culture Club is brought to you by Radical Yes, the Melbourne brand making cool shoes for modern women.
We acknowledge that the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people are the traditional custodians of the land we are on today. We would like to pay our respects to elders past and present.
We would also like to celebrate the rich history of First Nations culture and storytelling that we're continually learning from. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Well, 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 one of us had an engagement party this past week and it wasn't me.
Surprise! Hard launch on the podcast. No, it was me. If you follow me on Instagram, this is no surprise at all. But yeah, we had our engagement party last weekend in the 40-degree Melbourne heatwave, which was kind of iconic. Obviously, climate change, very scary and stuff, but you know, we kind of just had to embrace it. Couldn't cancel it, obviously.
I mean, if people know you in real life, for the weeks before that, you were like manifesting a sunny Melbourne summer engagement party, and you really got that in full swing. Like, you were like, yeah, I just want like, I want some warm weather. And then, yeah, it came out with like a heat wave, but it was so much fun.
Yeah. So it was just at my a family member's house, which we're very, very lucky and grateful for. When we got engaged and were thinking about celebrating it, we knew it would have to be done quickly because of the weather turning in Melbourne. Like, honestly, from like April, it's just so hot and cold and like all over the place, rain, etc. So we're like, we have to do this within 2 months. So I was like, oh, let's just do like a backyard thing, like so chill, just like get some drinks, get some food. And of course, it never is like that. Like, I was so, it was still chill to an extent. But my family and us, we put in like a lot of work to make it happen, obviously. And I ended up buying like a designer dress. I was like, I'm going to spend like $100 on a dress, like something chic, something white, like just off, like from a high street store, like off the rack, whatever. Ended up spending, yeah, a lot more than that, but worth it. I felt really pretty. And, you know, you're only a bride, tap wood, once. So I was kind of just trying to embrace that. And even with buying food and drinks, I was like, especially after Christmas and holidays, I was like, oh my God, this is a lot of money. But you don't think, you know, like in a year, I'm not going to be like, oh, I wish I had that extra money in my bank account. I'll be like, even already, I'm like, I'm so glad that we're spending time with friends and family and celebrating our love. And we just feel so very lucky. And Laurie actually got stopped on the street this week by a listener. If you're listening, please reveal yourself. Who said congratulations.
What happened? Yeah, give the story.
So he was walking on the street with his mum in Melbourne City in the day because his mum's visiting. She came down for the party from Scotland. And someone just yelled out, was like, Laurie, Laurie, congratulations on your engagement. And then he was like, thanks, like thinking he's one of my friends. I mean, we are, you know, if you're part of Culture Club, you're our friend.
Yeah.
But then he was like, oh, thanks, like he does his friend or whatever. And then the person was like, no, no, I just follow and I love Culture Club and stuff. So thank you to that person. I'm feeling very loved, even out on the street. Very, very lucky. And yeah, I hope that, you know, you had fun, Max. I got some great photos of you dancing and videos of you dancing.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even say this part right. So we went hard, as in like we, it was a very hot day. We were having a lot of fun. We danced on the dance floor to the point of almost being sick, both of us.
Yeah.
Separately, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I might be faint. I was a bit woozy at one stage.
There was a point. This is all thanks to my sister's amazing DJ skills. She was literally on the decks.
Yeah.
And we had some aircon on inside, but like when you're dancing and jumping around in 40 degrees, it doesn't matter if there's air conditioning on. So yeah, there was a point as well. I felt a bit dizzy and faint, but again, worth it. We didn't go as hard as we probably would have if it was normal weather, but It was really fun. And that same week, I did not go to any fashion festival stuff because I was just so overwhelmed with like making sure everything was in order for the party and making sure I wasn't exhausted, especially with the heat wave going on. But you were Miss Fashion Festival. I feel like you were the 2024 Fashion Festival Queen. Can you run us through your week as well?
Yeah, of course. I had such a good week. Because since being freelance, this is the first kind of fashion week, fashion festival event season that I've attended on behalf of me, almost not necessarily a publication I'm working for. And I was very lucky. I got to go to the shows on the first four nights of the premium runways, which typically look like two shows a night. You kind of get there around like six-ish or something, and then you finish up at like 9:30. And it was so fun. I went a little bit extra and I actually booked myself into a hotel for two nights in the city during that, just because I live a bit out of the way. I know. I felt really like living it up. I felt like I was almost in a different city visiting for a bit as well, just because, you know, a few days I had like various events throughout the day. So it made sense to just have like a good base, which was fun. I went to Pizza Pizza four nights in a row.
Obsessed with that. That was wild,
but my favorite.
For people who don't live in Melbourne or who might not even know, can you explain what Pizza 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 is?
Oh, yeah. So it is an American-style pizza place in the CBD near Parliament Station. And at the front, it's a small little takeout window kind of thing. But there is like hidden curtains at the back. So there's like a hidden back room, which you can go down and sit in. And I love it. They do massive by the slice, like slices or whole pies, and I always get the truffle mushroom or the triple cheese.
And like you only need one.
Yeah. I mean, so yes, good. Like two slices is like a decent, it's like a quarter of like a big pie. So we love. Anyway, spruiking that place.
Well, it's so good.
But apart from the pizza, the fashion was obviously a highlight during Melbourne Fashion Festival. I had such great fun at the shows. I think this year it was a real standout. Like it was very hard to pick a favorite show, I would say. And I also got to work on a piece with our friend Laura Roscioli for Harper's Bazaar. We covered the merging mob in Fashion Runway, which was such a treat. And we got to interview friend of the pod, Alira Potter, for that and a few other names in the industry. So we'll link that in the show notes if you wanted to take a read.
Amazing. Congrats. Well, it looked like a huge week career-wise for you. And I loved your TikTok. If everyone hasn't seen it, go on to Maggie's TikTok. It's just at emags, isn't it?
At Maggie underscore Zao on TikTok.
And there's the cutest video of like Maggie at Fashion Weeks, you know, like 5 years ago, volunteering, interning, and then Maggie this year. And it's very heartwarming and motivating. So anyway, plugging your TikTok away. But it's very cute. I think in the last two episodes we've spoken about this, but it's still going on. And I feel like last week was like the fever pitch of the Kate Middleton conspiracy theories and just Kate Middleton news. I do think over the past like 4 days it has been dying down slightly because nothing has come out, like nothing has been confirmed or denied. So people maybe are moving on a bit or just kind of wandering in the background versus being open with it on TikTok. But we still don't know where Kate Middleton is or has been and if she's okay.
And I think because I'm not following this story, you know, word for word with each news drop, because there are so many different rumors flying around. But I think my main takeaway is that royal family, not trustful. They love to not really tell people what's happening. And it's just, it's all around a shambles.
I think that one of their mottos is like never, I'm going to stuff this up. It's like
never explain.
Yeah. Never. Oh, that's it. Never complain, never explain, which I feel like is definitely happening here. Never explaining. The most recent news I've seen in like the past 24 hours is that the BBC is on standby for a royal family like announcement, but like that's not super confirmed. Apparently like you know, media is outside Buckingham Palace for an announcement. But one of the craziest stories I think has come out of this is basically a love quadrangle. So have you heard about this?
No, with who?
It's been rumored for the last few years that Prince William has been having an affair with a woman named Sarah Rose Cholmondeley, and she has an official title, which is the Marioness of Cholmondeley. The rumor is that Prince William and Sarah Rose are having an affair, and then Kate, Princess Catherine, had an affair with Prince William's relative, Thomas, who recently died.
Oh.
This is like, it's like so convoluted. He recently died from a, like a gunshot to the head. So the royal family is like, this was a suicide. But then people online are like, Princess Catherine was having an affair with this guy who died. Prince William did it because he had bruising on him. And there was an article going around that was like, what happens if a member of the royal family is accused of a serious crime? So that was that.
Oh my God.
And then apparently Princess Catherine, you know, is like pregnant with that man's baby. And then Sarah Rose is pregnant with Prince William's baby. So therefore it's like an illegitimate heir. It's like a full freaking soap opera.
Yeah, it makes me really want to get into The Crown, to be honest. I feel like so much is happening and it would make for good television. Obviously, we're talking about real lives, but, you know, I feel like the royal family is not just, we're not just like talking about like, you know, someone in our neighborhood. We can kind of speculate about this. We talked about that last episode. Trying to like rid us of the guilt.
Yeah. But Kate Middleton and like the royal family did say that she wouldn't be seen until Easter, which is coming up soon. It's in like not even 2 weeks. So I'm sure we'll see. We should be seeing her then, hopefully. Hopefully she's okay. There's also other conspiracy theories, you know, like hysterectomy, eating disorder, etc. But I do think that it shows an interesting desire in the public for this, like, almost like drama. Do you think this is a consequence of reality TV?
Ooh, like that question. I feel like it could be amplified by the type of reality TV that we've had access to in recent years, which is like unprecedented, like intimate details of someone's life, like, I don't know, Keeping Up the Kardashians. But I don't know, I think gossip mags have been around for decades and it's always been intrusive, like obviously Princess Diana. What do you think?
I think, yeah, like you said, rumors and gossip have always been around since like time began, humans began. I don't know, maybe it's just more amplified because of the internet and because I'm seeing a video of like an American in freaking San Francisco or something. Like I'm hearing their opinion of it on TikTok. So maybe it just feels more like everyone's talking about it versus like even 10, 20 years ago when you bought a gossip magazine and you just talk about it with your friends. But I do think that this kind of leads us onto our next topic. People making up these stories that have no truth to them, well, from what we know, people make up these, what's that called, like uncorroborated stories about people's lives and love triangles and pregnancies. I also think that that is because of fan fiction.
Completely. And you found this article in The Face that was published this week. It is called Why Fanfic is Hollywood's Latest Obsession, and it was written by Nicolaia Rips.
So aside from the royal family kind of creative writing that everyone's doing online, there actually is a new film genre that is booming, and it is fan fiction. I do think this all began thanks to The Kissing Booth, which was written by Beth Rickles in 2010 when she was 15 on Wattpad.
I didn't even know that that was a fanfic. I just thought that was, you know, a classic, classic Netflix type movie. Yeah.
Wow. I've never seen or read it, but I did know that it was a fanfic that this girl wrote like in her bedroom, and now it's like a huge franchise.
But that's Jacob Elordi. You need to watch that.
I know. I just feel, you know, I've said this before on the podcast with like teen, proper teen things. I just cringe so hard. I can't do it. maybe one day if I'm like sick or something.
And this is ultimate teen cringe.
Yeah. But, you know, got to support the Australians. So maybe I will watch. There's also a trailer that came out in the last week or two, and it's about the movie The Idea of You, which stars Anne Hathaway and Nicholas Galitzine, who is in Red, White and Royal Blue, which was also a fan fiction book. Mm. But this movie is based on a book by Robin Lee, and it's rumored, although that it has been denied, to be based on Harry Styles, like a fan fiction dream version of what it would be like to date Harry Styles.
And that's not even the first big fanfic adaptation that we've seen about Harry. Of course, there was that movie/series After, which was released in 2019. I did not watch this one. And also, I think it's a trilogy by now, which is just hectic.
No, I haven't seen it either. Who does it star?
Oh, God, I just checked, and it's not even just a trilogy. It is like a 5-part movie franchise, which is so hectic. The guy at the center of it is called Hero Fiends Tiffin, and the woman is Josephine Langford. So I have not watched this, but anyway, I'm a big fan of fanfic in general. I used to be a avid consumer and also an occasional creator of fanfic in my early teen years. So I kind of love seeing this stuff.
I mean, it is inspiring for people, like for writers and to like people who love making up stories and writing on Wattpad, that like your story can be good enough to make it to like books and like best-selling books and movies and TV shows. But I want to know more about The Idea of You.
I know. I've been seeing some saucy clips. So the plot of The Idea of You follows this single mother who is Anne Hathaway, who takes her daughter to Coachella and ends up in a relationship with the lead singer of a boy band. In the film, the woman is 40 and the boy band member is 24. I just, reading that out loud, I can't believe that is a tried and true, like your classic fanfic narrative. Yeah. And I just can't believe it's turned into this huge movie starring Miss Anne Hathaway.
I know. I am so excited for this. I'll be sat. I'm ready. So as mentioned at the top, Nicolia Rips wrote about this for The Face magazine in Why Fanfic is Hollywood's Latest Obsession. So we will now read a little bit out now.
The piece is really great. It kind of talks about why fanfic is sought after in Hollywood at the moment. We've got the piece linked in our show notes, so definitely take a read if you're interested. But we'll just read out a snippet now. Thanks to this algorithm, fans are unknowingly at the helm of what film studios produce, stripping power from the publishing industry and exclusionary practices, nepotism and closed doors, but also from literary standards, extensive edits, criticism, away from process and practice. Ultimately, the result conflates what is good with what is popular, a seemingly inescapable trend that's resulted largely in the sacrifice of culture at the altar of content. Mining alternative sources of IP means that there will be even fewer chances in Hollywood for original screenplays to cut through all the noise.
She continues, call it an IP money grab, call it honoring a community-oriented grassroots medium, call it the oldest story in the book. Hollywood's newest cash cow is a decentralized behemoth of horny teenage writers, queer fandoms, and dorks. It remains to be seen whether Wattpad and Hollywood will make good on diverse community-led stories, or if we're in for a couple more iterations of Harry Styles, if it's fact or ultimately fan fiction.
What I really like about this piece is how seriously it takes, you know, more generally, a lot of young female writers or a lot of young queer writers that, you know, what a lot of teens write in their bedroom a lot of the time for fun and a lot of the time with like a horny element to it. I love that it's kind of taken seriously by these massive conglomerates.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I think it is really good that hopefully this is giving more opportunities to, queer writers, writers who might not have access to like the publishing industry, it does create a way into this industry that is very like nepotism based, and for people of a certain class usually who have the time and leisure to sit around writing screenplays from their daddy's house. I really like this piece and how seriously it is also taking criticizing the industry itself. It's that time of year where the weather is just so unpredictable. It's truly rainy one minute, then sunny the next.
To be honest, March is my favorite month for weather. I love autumn and I love transseasonal dressing.
You know I love a good trench coat as much as the next girl, but sometimes it's difficult figuring out what shoes are the most versatile for our changing weather.
Our mates over at Radical Yes have heaps of gorgeous choices. Their range of slip-on shoes are smart, functional, and stylish.
I love their new Miro leather loafer and their Super Journey leather Velcro trainer, which is a pair of white sneakers that I actually just picked up for myself.
We've also rejigged our top Radical Yes picks for transseasonal dressing, so take a look over at our show notes.
Don't forget, Radical Yes have created a discount code for you all too. Use CultureClub25 at the checkout to get $25 off any order from their new arrivals collection.
If you want to hear more about Radical Yes, you can find them on Instagram at Radical Yes and online at radicalyes.com.au. Jazz, I have a very important question for you.
Yes.
Gay son or thought daughter?
Oof, that's a tricky one. gay son.
Yeah, girl, same. This was a question posed to dozens of celebrities at a recent awards night by TikToker Harry Daniels. Did you see these videos circulating the web?
I did not, and I don't know who that TikToker is. Sometimes with TikTokers, I feel so like I'm in such a bubble. Like, obviously, I know we're all in our echo chambers, but sometimes it's like, this is the most famous TikToker in the world. And I'm like, I've never seen that person in my life.
Oh, my God. Okay, so Harry's content, I'm sure you might have seen one of his videos. He's a guy who finds celebrities in the wild and just sings at them.
Right. Yeah, I just don't find that funny. Like, okay, like, oh, you just see a celebrity, like, their face is like, what the hell? Like, that's, yeah. Anyway, to each their own.
I think why his content is really popular is that there is an element of, like, secondhand embarrassment to it. Like, it's a hard watch, but I don't know. I can't look away.
So, at the same event, it was reported that Billie Eilish said, there's some, like, TikTokers here, while subtly brushing them off because of the large amount of TikTokers who were seen on the red carpet and then seen, like, in the press pit interviewing people. And these videos led to a heated online conversation about the role of influencers, not just on the red carpet, but also in journalism spaces in general. And it's something that you and I are quite passionate about.
Yeah. And we're not alone. As you mentioned, there's been a lot of talk of this on the internet recently. For instance, an entertainment editor at Cosmopolitan, Tamara Fuentes, tweeted, and this is why me and probably some other journos dread red carpets, which already were difficult to begin with. We're getting even less time because influencers have gotten spots for stuff like this, referring to Harry's thought or gay question. And we have to chase a soundbite instead of asking actual questions.
There was also a tweet going around by Rendy Jones, who's a film and TV journalist who's written for Them, Pace Magazine, Vanity Fair, etc. And they say, and there's a reason why Billy was like, why are there TikTok influencers here? Y'all aren't funny nor real journalists with any professionalism. There's only a select few I can think of who earn their keep, but most of y'all, ugh, gross. I personally see why journalists are getting so heated about this, especially when we've had so many layoffs recently, especially in America. BuzzFeed, Los Angeles Times, Vice, which, you know, is a sister site of the company that you previously worked for, that I work for now. Like, seeing these industries being decimated by basically corporate greed at the end of the day, these executives taking big six-figure salaries and bonuses and not leaving any for, like, the content creators who actually make the product, it means that there's less publications. And then, you know, you get these influencers coming in who are just giving the studio execs what they want. So like, sometimes the studios pay the influencers to attend these things. I understand for publicity, whatever. But when you have people who are being paid by the studio interviewing the artists, the actors or whatever, they're not there to critically ask questions about whether it's the story, the movie, or the what it was like working on set, holding. I'm not saying as well that like entertainment journalism has been particularly like hard newsy in the past. There's always been an element of like, at the end of the day, it's entertainment, but you still have to have the opportunity to ask people more serious questions about the industry. They've trained in this industry for X amount of years to be able to ask these questions. I think of our former colleague, Alicia Vrajral, who is so freaking talented and has had a decade of interviewing celebrities at these press junkets and getting really thoughtful, meaningful questions out of them that aren't just like this soundbite for TikTok or like getting the, I don't know, some like funny moment and trying to be the celebrity's friend. You're not there to be the celebrity's friend. You're there to interview them. And it just, you can tell I'm quite heated about this. And I've seen this on the in the Australian film industry as well. You have studios and film companies inviting people like influencers, etc., to movie premieres. Obviously, they're local celebrities. I understand that. But if you only have influencers there and these influencers are getting more invites than journalists or people in the media, then you're going to have like almost the scale's going to be tipped so far to people who are just happy to be there. They're not actually the people reviewing. They're not the critics. They're just people there to have a good time and take like a fit check. No offense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a big conversation that I can see like definitely both sides of. So before we get more into our thoughts, I wanted to point out this article that was on Mashable this year. It's called What Do We Lose When Influencers Replace Journalists on the Red Carpet? Eleanor Taverner writes this great piece, and we were actually lucky enough to have her read some of it out in her own words. So here she is.
Studios paying social media personalities like Daniels to do TikTok bits on the red carpet legitimizes behavior that would be deemed unprofessional for journalists and puts traditional media in competition with attention-grabbing theatrics for short-form viral videos. For many casual consumers, entertainment news now exists in bite-sized videos on TikTok or one-line summaries posted by aggregators like Film Updates or PopCrave on X. However, much of this content, like Daniel's video, isn't newsworthy, and aggregators often conflate these viral clips with headlines about upcoming releases and serious issues like abuse allegations. The problem doesn't just lie with the quality of content or where audiences are receiving it. It's also about the method by which audiences are consuming it. As influencers, they are paid by studios, while journalists work independently. Red carpets and press junkets might not be the sites of hard-hitting news, but reporters losing any access to powerful people should always ring alarm bells about our ability to hold those in power accountable.
But Jazz, both you and me have also worked on the sponsored side of media. So we do see publications also being paid to like interview celebs or cover new movie releases. And again, that there is a similarity there still. I do think, obviously, both of us have journalism backgrounds. We're not negating the importance of that. But I wonder if there is a bit of like gatekeeping happening as well. In Eleanor's piece, she talks about how young people are moving away from traditional media outlets and towards internet personalities, for better or worse.
Which is bad. It's bad.
Well, mainstream news, but
that's so bad. Like, we need freaking news and we need journalism. We need things that aren't attached to money. And I know that I literally work in branded content, but like I'm saying, like for people in our industry, for our colleagues, like we need people to be holding, the whole point of journalism is to hold the powers to account. Mm-hmm. And seeing the erosion of that is freaking scary. And to see, you know, these literal kids from LA, like 19-year-olds from LA, being like having the opportunity to talk to people in like the upper echelons of whether it's film or TV or the directors, and being like, so what do you think of this? And you're like, oh my God, I know that there's an entertainment part, like value to it. And that's obviously the people, what the people want, because it's getting views. But it's just like that. I think there has to be room for both. And I think it's scary seeing it all go to the one side so quickly.
Yes. And in theory, yes, of course, like that is the purpose of journalism. But I do think we are becoming tired, fatigued, and skeptical and cynical of these mainstream news outlets who aren't really doing this a lot of the time. And that, again, it's not on journalists' fault. There's a lack of funding, like you mentioned before. It's about just making money in the quickest way possible a lot of the time. So it's like, I understand why young people are not turning to traditional news outlets when they're not really serving them. I don't think that internet personalities fill that void, but this conversation does remind me of like the whole fashion blogger versus traditional fashion media conversation we had over a decade ago. I look at pioneering bloggers like Tabby Gevinson, who entered the industry like as a preteen. And yes, she was sitting, you know, front row in fashion weeks, and she copped so much slack for that. But I think she also could add a lot, right? So I do think in our conversations, it's obviously not black and white. We look at internet personalities who have really done incredible jobs. I always think about Amelia from Chicken Shop Date, who I think is a good example of this. I don't know if you agree.
Well, I would say she's a journalist. She has a journalism background.
True.
I don't see her as I see her as a creator now because of what she's done, but she works so hard, and she started Chicken Shop Date from like nothing and created her own like journalism series. So for me, she's like a freelance journalist and always has been, and now she's becoming friends with celebrities, but she still can ask them fun questions, which I thought that's mentioned in the piece, isn't it?
Yeah,
that Amelia's like considered one of the content creators, and I'm like, well, she started like she studied media comms at uni and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. In the piece, I also talk about Rhys Feldman, who is on TikTok as Guy with a Movie Camera. So he was doing a lot of things like the glam bots and stuff. And because he was working also in social media while he was working as a production assistant on the fourth season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, he actually became the studio's like go-to TikTok consultant. And he also recently co-hosted MTV's June Part 2 Red Carpet. So like, again, there are people who put in the work and produce good work, but that is obviously not the case for everyone.
Yeah, I think, and like if you, I don't know, I think in my opinion, if you have this background, whether it's in journalism or production, or like you're already, maybe that's maybe in gatekeeping. If you're already in the industry, therefore you have maybe more gravitas to be asking people questions, or like more, I don't know, kind of like you've worked for it a bit more versus it just, I think what upsets me the most is influencers with no context and who don't put in the work to research the people, or to maybe it's like being, you know, not being grateful or things like that, where I'm just like, why are you asking these people such dumb questions? Like you see it, I've seen it on, I think it was a June or maybe Willy Wonka press junket, and this influencers asking these like Timothy Chalamet and co some questions, and they're just looking at this person like this is so bad. And I think what upsets me the most is people not thinking that interviewing people is an art and a skill that you develop over years and years. It's not just a little soundbite with a freaking TikTok mic. These like to build rapport and to like research, that's a job. And that's what upsets me the most. It's like people's jobs are getting taken by people who don't have consideration of like what actually goes into that.
Yeah. And I actually think the other flip side of this, which is also to be critiqued, is that this type of viral TikTok content that we're now so used to when it comes to film premieres and red carpets has actually, I would say, dumbed down like traditional news outlets and traditional media as well, because you actually do see journalists also doing this. Like the amount of kind of junkets that I've watched where people from reputable-ish sites are asking similar meme-y questions, because that's just kind of what audiences now expect. I think there's been a change of success metric in terms of what we expect from interviews. And it's hard because it's a balance, right? Like, I enjoy a casual conversation of Zendaya talking about Tom Holland, but I also do want to know about her preparing for a role in her next film. So it's finding that balance, because at the end of the day, like, these are actors. They're also entertainers by trade.
Okay, I think that we have talked on this subject long enough. Obviously, it's very, like, ongoing topic, in my opinion, that we are just at a crux where it feels like it's like a pressure cooker for like people of different industries. So yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about this again in the future. Max, time for recommendations. What have you been loving watching, reading, or listening to the past week?
I've been listening to quite a few podcasts, and the one I do want to recommend is called Search Engine. It is hosted by PJ Vogue, and that name might be familiar because he used to be one of the co-hosts of the podcast Reply All. This series is very similar to Reply All. Search Engine essentially just like takes a look at one internet question, or one question about the internet that's floating around or being sent to the podcast team, and then they answer it. One that I really enjoyed that was recommended to me by friend Liat, who is a listener of the podcast. Don't know if she'll hear this far, but anyway. And the episode is called Who's Behind All Those Scammy Text Messages We've All Been Getting? What you get out of this episode is like a massive investigative big piece of journalism, speaking of proper journalism. And they kind of get this investigative reporter who ends up traveling halfway around the world to find out, you know, who's sending him these texts. Why are they sending people these texts? And also the very like scary business behind this. So as like, I guess, a trigger warning, it talks a lot about human trafficking. So
wow,
that's kind of like,
oh gosh,
a little sizzle about what it's about.
Sounds so interesting. And yeah, I think that's something that's so not spoken about modern life, is that we get all these scam phone calls and text messages and stuff, and it's just part of life now. We're just like, anyway.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't there like a, I don't know, like a government investigation into how to stop this? Because I don't answer my phone now if I don't know the number. If I don't have the number saved, I'm not answering it. I don't care.
Yeah. And in Australia, we've had such a big rise in money scams as well, and the billions of dollars lost to that. So, I mean, I think it's a very timely conversation.
Yeah. We're keen to listen.
And what are you going to be recommending for us this week?
I am recommending a TV show called Apples Never Fall, and it's on Binge. I just, as I said, that had a flashback that I think I recommended the book on the podcast like probably 2 years ago. So this is a TV show based on the book by Leanne Moriarty, who is the author behind Little White Lies and Nine Perfect Strangers. So this TV series is set in West Palm Beach, and it follows the Delaney family. So two parents and four adult children. Two parents ran a tennis academy for like 30 years, but then Joy and Stan, the parents, retire, and a young woman arrives on their doorstep injured and turns the whole family's world upside down. Then Joy actually goes missing, and her four children are left to piece together everything that they thought they knew about their parents. So it is a mystery. It is a drama. It has a great cast. It has Alison Brie as one of the children. Sam Neill plays the dad. He's amazing. Jake Lacey, who some people might know him as like the dickhead husband of one of the White Lotus characters in the first season. And then some other like lesser known actors, Essie Randalls and Connor Merrigan Turner. Also, Joy is played by Annette Bening. So like really great ensemble cast of really, really strong actors. yeah, it's a great mystery. It's kept me and my grandma and mother-in-law watching. Like, you know, we're kind of binge watching it at the moment. So yeah, would 100% recommend if you want like a well-written murder mystery.
Adore. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Culture Club. We can't wait to be back in your ears soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.